Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the backyard. This is Margaret Marshall, your host, and I hope that little classic reggae by Mr. Kevin MacLeod have put you in the mood for some relaxation, because that's what we do when we get together in the backyard. And for those of you who may come by later, when we come by to Labrish in the backyard, we are here to celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. And this broadcast is not coming from Jamaica, it's coming from the Deep South. But we get together each week on a Thursday at 8 o'clock, and we take a virtual trip to the island that we love. So for those of you in the diaspora who know what it feels like to be in Jamaica at this time of day, we have the trade winds blowing gently across the island. So I would ask you to pretend that you're in your favorite chair as we zoom ourselves to an hour of relaxation. And just go over some of Jamaica's history, because that's what we do each week. There are several means of getting Jamaican's history, and our subject tonight is something I stumbled upon because of the work of Dr. Joy Lumsden. I was actually still researching what we have been doing for quite a few months on the History Month, was last month, and I have been going over some of Dr. Lumsden's sites. And when we were doing last week's segment, I clicked on one of her links, and it talked about the Alpha Boys School being so important to part of the building of the music culture that we have here now, you know, the ska and the reggae and the new dance hall music. It talked a lot about most of these musicians coming out of Alpha. So I decided to do a little research, because I must confess that I was born and raised in Kingston, spent all my holidays in Savlamar, where my mother was born, and I have had a lot of old relatives there. But in Kingston, I knew there was an Alpha Girls School, but I really didn't know about an Alpha Boys School until I saw that. So I became very curious and decided to do some further research, and came up with quite a lot of material that I'm going to share with you tonight. So first, we're going to, incidentally, AlphaOldBoysAssociation.com has a site with its history, and it's very vibrant, because, you know, they even have some recordings that you can purchase in support of the Old Boys Association. So I would encourage you to go to AlphaOldBoysAssociation.com, and you will see some of what I'm going to talk about tonight, including more details of some of the graduates. Tonight, I am going to read the history as it appears on their website. I'm also going to give you some information about the band of sisters that helped to put to make that school a success, as well of two of the famous graduates who went on to do some astounding things, and they're both not with us anymore. You know, they've passed on. But because we here in the backyard, we celebrate, not only do we discover people, and we want to celebrate them, and I'm sure that some of them may have some descendants. It doesn't tell too much about their, you know, whether they were married with children. And I'm going to read some information about their musical careers. But also, I got curious about this band of sisters who help the poor all over the world. So I'm going to give you a little information on that too. And my objective is to prove the point that, you know, one person can have an idea and a passion, and if they really pursue it, you never know, generations after they've left the planet, it's still going on and doing some good for the world. So I'm going to start off with the information on the Alpha Boys School, as it goes on their website. And I always call myself giving a voice to some of this history because, you know, it's all online, folks. You can find it. So let me start, with the Alpha Boys School's history. Alpha Boys School's founder, Justina Rippall, spelled R-I-P-A-L-L, was born in Kingston, Jamaica, of a Portuguese father and a French mother on the 18th of July, 1852, the youngest of five children. Jessie, as she was called, worshipped at the Holy Trinity Cathedral Catholic Church and was an active member of the Ladies of Charity. She and her two close companions, Josephine and Louise, decided to establish an orphanage in Jamaica. With what savings they had, they purchased the 43-acre property, Alpha, that in parentheses, apparently that was the name of the place, I don't know, on South Camp Road in Kingston, Jamaica. On the 1st of May, 1880, the date was set for planting the mustard seed, which eventually grew into the world-renowned and famous Alpha Boys School. Holding a little orphaned girl with one hand and a statue of Our Lady with the other hand, Jessie unlatched the wicket gate and walked up the dusty path to the cottage. On entering, she placed the statue on a windowsill and presented Our Lady with a spray of wild flowers. History does not recall the date when the Alpha Orphanage was open to boys, but it is thought to be about 2 years, 2 or 3 years after the 1st of May, 1880. So that would make it about, this is a sidebar, that would make it apparently 1883, which I can't even wrap my mind around those times. Anyway, after 10 years of poverty and challenges of all kinds, the valiant little band of three were joined on the 12th of December in 1890 by a group of Sisters of Mercy from London, England, and the work grew by leaps and bounds. On the 2nd of February, 1891, Jessie, Louise, and Josephine received the habit of the Order of Mercy, taking as their religious names Sister Mary Peter Claver, Sister Mary Joseph, and Sister Mary Margaret, respectively. A long life is a short one as it seems, and after so many long years of total dedication and loving, caring service, each was called to her reward. Sister Joseph, in 1895, Sister Mary, in 1944, and Mother Mary Cleaver, on the 10th of December in 1949. Over the years, Sisters of Mercy have come to Alpha from England, Ireland, Malta, USA, Canada, Panama, British Honduras, Cuba, and Trinidad. Many of the Alpha graduates have joined the Sisters of Mercy and are now following the example set so long ago by our beloved Mother Cleaver. Once a sister was Sister Mary Ignatius Davis. Sister Ignatius was born in Innswood, St. Catherine, Jamaica, in 1921. She was baptized at the Roman Catholic Church in Spanish Town and went to the elementary school in that town. Later, her family migrated to Kingston, and she then attended Alpha Academy. The sisters there made such an impression on her through their concern for the poor that she joined the Sisters of Mercy on the 1st of February in 1939 and stayed in residence for the remainder of her life. Sister Ignatius outlived a lot of her famous musical students and scholars, died on the 9th of February, 2003, at the age of 81, at the University Hospital of the West Indies in Jamaica, one day after suffering a heart attack. Sister Ignatius lived and worked among her boys at Alpha Boys School for 64 years. And I want to take a break now to welcome any of our listeners that might be listening to the show online. And if you are listening online, actually, you will see a picture of this Sister Mary Davis blowing a saxophone. I mean, in our habit, I think it's such a precious photograph that I had to put it online. And those people listening online get a little flash, you know, pictures going as they're listening, I suppose, to keep them interested. But that picture of her is so precious. I am assuming that she was very versed in music, and that's why she was playing. I hope I'm calling the instrument right, but I think it's a saxophone. Yeah, it's not a trumpet. I know a trumpet. Let me go back to the article. The past students of Alpha Boys School will always be deeply grateful to the many Sisters of Mercy, too numerous to name. But when one remembers terminology like "my son," which was used daily by the Mother D and Aunt Jo, that tells you something about the personal relationship between the nuns and the boys, which bring us to the point of the goals and objectives of this great home school called Alpha Boys School in Kingston, Jamaica. Like all the nuns before her, from Sister Alfonso to Sister Mary, and they have all the names of the sisters here, I won't read them all, Sister Ignatius played a great part in preparing the boys for their future, which had a wide range of skills to choose from, including industry, agriculture, horticulture, poultry farming, shoemaking, tailoring and woodwork, plumbing, electronics, welding, mechanics, printing, bookbinding, and music. Alpha Boys School is a vocational school in Kingston, Jamaica, and a major contributor to the past and current success of Jamaica's popular musical achievements. When I read that, you know, it really, really resonated with me. Because here's the point, ladies and gentlemen. All that came out of that was started with one woman with a dream of helping the less fortunate. She was born of a Portuguese father and a French mother in 1852. And look how many years she planted that mustard seed, and it's still thriving and growing. And to know, you know, when we talk about out of many one people, and we are really a diverse culture, culturally our diversity is amazing, like no other place on earth. Because our current music now, even the most recent dance hall, which, it, there's ska, there's reggae, and now dance hall, came out of that school, according to the documentation here. You know, I'm not making this up. So my point is, you know, I am hoping that the current Jamaicans will really, it will resonate with them that their past is so rich with so many people contributing their time, their love, their money to the young and to the less fortunate. You know, so we have so much to celebrate and be thankful for. Now, from that article, you will know that this young lady and her two friends, I read in, as I was doing some follow-up, I read in Oliver Senior's Encyclopedia of Jamaican Culture that they raised the money by selling wood from the property that they had and doing other things. That's how they raised the money that to do what, at least to get started. Now, let me give you a little background about how the Sisters of Mercy was started. And before that, I want you to sort of bring you up to date of where the Sisters of Mercy, the band, the people are now, I mean, in terms of the size. The numbers of Sisters of Mercy in the United States of America is 4,732 pupils in parochial school. 104,726 orphans and children in institutions. 3,834 pupils in academic and high schools. 9,967 hospitals conducted by Sisters of Mercy. 53 hospitals and 67 orphanages all over the world, Jamaica being one of them. Now, let me tell you how that group got started. And I would like to just take a minute to thank all my listeners online and those who may come by later on. And remember, we're here each Thursday where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica land we love. And I'm always asking listeners who may come by or who's on the board to, you know, participate in some way. If you, we have all our shows archived, and if you can listen to one of the older shows that may be in the archives that may tweak your interest. and you can copy and paste the address of that and send it to someone who might have an interest in that subject too. But we've really covered a whole lot of subjects. But tonight, the caption of this is the connection of the Catholic religion to the current cultural music. Okay, let me go to my notes here to tell you a little bit about how this Band of Mercy Sisters were started. It is described on the Catholic Historic website as a congregation of women founded in Dublin, Ireland in 1827 by Catherine Elizabeth MacAudley, A-U-L-E-Y, Audley. She was born in 1787 in Dublin, and she descended from an ancient and distinguished Catholic family. She was the eldest of three children. Now, she was born at a time when the Protestants were really trying to crush the Catholic religion. You know, this religious, wars have been going on for generations, you know, from before Christ. Anyway, her family tried as much as possible to keep the faith alive in those who had so many inducements to relinquish it and engage in becoming a Protestant. You know, everybody was trying to win, I suppose, souls. So there were more people trying to convert the Catholics to become Protestants. Anyway, this particular family was always involved in charity and charitable works. Now, the father and mother, they state here that Mrs. MacAudley, whose charm and accomplishment made her a favorite in society, she used that to try to, I suppose, get money to help the poor. Now, after the husband's death in 1794, the affairs of the family became so involved that the widow sold their estate and moved to Dublin. She wasn't officially born in Dublin. The organization was founded there, but she was born somewhere else and then moved there. Here, the family came so completely under the influence of Protestants that was fashionable in the society at that time. So Catherine, all our other sisters became Protestants, but she refused. She revered the memory of her father too greatly to embrace a religion that he did not, you know, like. So the mother did not long survive her husband, and after her death, they became orphans, and they were passed into a family of relatives who invested their whatever the father had left them for their benefit. From one relative to another, the orphans passed, each guardian doing all in their power to strengthen the children and lead them into the Protestant religion. Catherine, however, could not be induced by treats or threats or promises to join the Protestant worship. And she clung with strained persistence to her father's religion. But having no one to consult in her doubts, she finally became unsettled in her religious ideas. Precarious and serious beyond her years, she grew daily more alive to the insecurity of her spiritual position and finally acceded to the desires of her friends to examine the religion she saw practiced among her truly virtuous relatives. The more she read, the more she thought and studied, the stronger her doubts in regard to that religion became. Now, after a while, she decided that there's no way she could become a Catholic. Now, Catherine is described as being beautiful. Her complexion was very fair, her eyes blue, and her hair golden. Her nature was unselfish and affectionate. Through several advantageous alliances were proposed, nothing could induce her to marry. Now, more and more attracted to the faith of her father, Catherine became acquainted with a dean of a St. James Church in Dublin, and their friendship greatly aided her. After this time, a distant relative of her mother, returning from India, purchased a luxurious house a few miles from Dublin and became attracted by Catherine's appearance, and they decided to adopt her. Consequently, in the year 1803, Catherine removed to her new and beautiful home. Apparently, it was a mansion that these people had. Now, this is where things turned around in her favor. Shortly after, first of all, her guardians were Protestants, of course, but they did not object to her being in the Catholic Church. Apparently, in those days, it was a big thing, you know what I mean? But they would not allow her to have a crucifix in the house where she lived. Anyway, she just put up with whatever they did not want. And shortly after, the person who adopted her passed away and left all of their fortune to Catherine. Well, Catherine took that as a sign from God, and she promptly decided to give almost everything away to the poor, to help the poor, because that's what she wanted to do all along. So Catherine came into full possession, when she came into full possession of the property, she felt that God required her to do something permanent for the poor, and she was now able to carry out her early visions of funding an institution in which women might, when out of work, find a temporary home. In this undertaking, she was able to get some advisors to help her. And that is how they started with purchasing one house, and that's how the Sisters of Mercy got started. Now, if you remember the Jamaican story, it was one person who had this vision of helping the poor. I don't think she knew about the Sisters of Mercy. They must have heard what she was doing and the hardship she was having at the time. This was 1883 now, which is not long after they really started. Now, here is my point, folks. We're talking 18-something. Can you imagine how difficult traveling from Ireland or England or those places to Jamaica was? And now, remember now, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about nuns and habits, right? You know, they're what they wear. What can you imagine coming from a country that you do not have the kind of heat like you have on the island of Jamaica? At least those that were there already, these three angels that bought the property and started to take in children, they were already born there, and they knew what the heat was like. But I can just imagine all of the other nuns, well, the three weren't nuns at the time. They became nuns after they banned. The documentation does not really tell you how many came initially and how it all got started. It's very, very sketchy. So, of course, I'm making up my own stories because I am sure it was not an easy venture for any of them. And apparently, when you take on this habit to become a sister of mercy, you're relinquishing, you know, any kind of luxurious living because you're helping the poor. So I thought that was a very interesting thing, how when the three ladies in Jamaica originally got the idea, I'm sure they didn't say, well, we know we're going to get help from a particular group. I suppose being strong Christian people, they knew that the help would come, or was just giving and doing from the heart. And that is what I think the whole lesson, as we trace almost all of the people who became like a satellite to light up so many other people's life, you know, starting very small. One small seed can grow into a lot of benefit for a lot of people. So now I am going to, first I'd like to ask if there's anyone on the board who want to weigh into the Labrish, because that's what a Labrish is all about. Please hit 1 on your telephone, and I'll be more than happy to open up the mic and welcome you to the world. So let me know when you want to weigh in. Now, tonight I want to tell you about two graduates, as I mentioned before. I was not familiar with any of these men that were spoken about here, but from what I read, you know, they were quite popular in their own right. And there are several of them. I just selected two because, as I say, those two have, they're not with us anymore. And I think that because they came from that particular school that started very humble and small, it's worthwhile talking about them, what the school contributed to them, what they contributed to our culture and the rest of the world. So if I don't see any hands going up, I'll go ahead and read what I have. The first person I want to tell you about, and some of the old timers, especially those that perhaps might appreciate jazz or the kind of music that they played in their day, they might know these people. The first one is Harold McNear. And he was born in November of 1931 in Kingston, Jamaica. And he died in 1971 in London. And he was a renowned saxophonist and flutist. McNear started out at the Alpha Boys School under the tutelage of Victor Tuller, T-U-L-L-O-C-H. While praying with Joe Harriet, a lifelong friend who considered McNear his younger brother. And it says here, Wilton Boogie Gainer, G-A-Y-N-A-I-R, and Barbara Motters Band, he spent the first decade of his musical career in the Bahamas, where he used the name Little G for recording and live performances. His early Bahamian recordings were mostly in Caribbean music styles rather than jazz, in which he sang and played both alto and tenor saxophone. He also played a calypso singer in the 1958 film Island Woman. I've never seen that show. If anyone on the board is familiar with that, please put your hand up and let me know. But I didn't know we had a Jamaican starring in a film in 1958. All these things are very intriguing to me when I find them out. Because, you know, we really know so little about our own people. So anyway, this Harold McNair was a singer in that film, Island Woman. In 1960, he went to Miami to record his first album, a mixture of jazz and calypso, numbers entitled Bahama Bash. It was around this time that he began playing the flute, which would eventually become his signature instrument. Initially, he had some lessons in New York, but he was largely self-taught. He departed for Europe later in 1960. Like many other West Indian jazz musicians of the 1950s and 60s, and they put in parentheses here, Harriet, Dizzy Reese, and Harry Beckett, McNair moved to Britain. However, before arriving in London, he toured Europe with Quincy Jones and worked on film and TV scores in Paris. Once in London, he quickly gained a reputation as a formidable player on flute, alto, and tenor saxophone, leading to a regular gig at Ronnie Scott's nightclub, wherever that is, must be in London. I've never been there, and if any of the listeners know where Ronnie Scott's nightclub is, please put your hand up. Let me go back to the article. His playing drew the admiration of bass player Charles Mingus, M-I-N-G-U-S, who was in London to shoot the 1961 motion picture All Night Long. McNair was part of a quartet, Mingus Form, to rehearse while during his stay in Britain. However, the band never performed in front of a playing audience due to a ban imposed by the Musicians Union on U.S. musicians in British nightclubs. A recording of the band exists, playing the earliest recorded version of the now famous composition, Peggy's Blue Sky. That's the name of the album, I suppose. But it has never been released, despite featuring in the movie itself. The Musicians Union ban was lifted later in 1961, leading to a residency by U.S. tenor saxophone Zoot Sims and Ronnie Scott's club. Ironically, McNair's own quartet were also on the bill, resulting in two of his performances appearing on the album made to commemorate the gig, Zoot Live at Ronnie Scott's. Around the same time, he also recorded with the drummer Tony Comby and the percussionist Jack Costanzo. C-O-Costanzo, C-O-S-T-A-N-Z-O. So here we have a Mr. Harold McNair, who apparently were involved with two motion pictures. I don't know if All Night Long and Island Woman, that was filmed in 1958. So and he is a product of the Alpha Boys School. So with that said, they said here, McNair, M-C-N-A-I-R is his name, let me not mess it up, briefly returned to the Bahamas where he cut his first all-jazz LP, which is titled Up in the Air with Harold McNair. Catchy. Before settling back in London permanently. His first UK album as a leader was Affectionate Sink was made for the Island Records in 1965. The session saw him team up with Coleman, then current rhythm section of David Izon, I-Z-E-N-Z-O-N. So they go on to tell you here about a little bit about all of that. But I was very intrigued to know that he accomplished so much during his lifetime. And not that I should know everything, but I've never heard of him. So do we have any jazz fanatics online? Please hit one on your telephone so you can join the Labrish and enlighten the passionate senior here a little bit if you know of Mr. Harold McNair. But I really just want to celebrate him tonight, even though he's not with us in person. But to know that, you know, he was cultivated at Alpha. And from what I'm reading, and they have some interesting stories on their website, you know, it's never possible to give all the details on the short time we have on the radio. And as I always tell the listeners, we're here to relax and have fun, you know, and I try to be as accurate as possible when I read all of this. But sometimes I'm reading it for the first time because, you know, I research it, I find it, I print it out, and then the night of the show I read it. So I get excited sometimes when I hear all these neat things, and I hope we can have a lot more of these things of the past circulating about our true Jamaican culture and not some of what passed over my desk sometimes. So that was Mr. McNair. So we're going to be, we're really celebrating him tonight. And if there are any of his descendants who may come by later on, I want you to know that the backyard really, really celebrates him and how he got his start. Those three precious women that really lived their passion by starting that school to help Jamaicans. So let me talk now about Mr. Joseph Harriott. He's the second subject of the night. And he was born in 1928 in Kingston, and he passed away in 1973. He was pretty young, I suppose, in Hampton, in London, I suppose. And he was described as a Jamaican jazz musician and composer whose principal instrument was the alto saxophone. Initially a bebopper, he became a pioneer of free-form jazz. He was educated at Kingston's famed Alpha Boys School, which produced a number of prominent Jamaican musicians. He moved to the UK as a working musician in 1951 and lived in the country for the rest of his life. Harriott was part of a wave of Caribbean jazz musicians who arrived in Britain during the 1950s, including Dizzy Reese, Harold McNair, Harry Beckett, and Wilton McNair. So it's two men. McGair, G-A-Y-N-A-I-R. Now, Mr. Harriott's early career is what I'm going to read next. Like the majority of alto players of his generation, Harriott was deeply influenced by Charlie Parker. He developed a style which fused Parker with his own Jamaican musical sensibility. Most notably, the mento and calypso music he grew up with. Even in his later experiments, his roots were always audible. However, it was Harriott's mastery of bebop which gained him immediate kudzu with the British jazz scene upon his arrival in London in 1951. During the 50s, he had two long spells with drummer Tony Kinsley's band. He punctuated by membership of Ronnie Scott's short-lived big band, occasionally spells leading his own quartet and working in the quartets of drummer Phil Seaman and Alan Ganley, G-A-N-L-E-Y. He began recording under his own name in 1954, releasing a handful of EP, extended play, that means. I suppose that is not even relevant now. Records from Columbia throughout the 1950s. However, the majority of his 1950s recordings were as a sideman with the musicians previously mentioned, also backing a diverse array of performers from Main Street vocalists Lita Rosa, L-I-T-A-R-O-Z-A, to traditional trombonist George Chisholm, to the West African sounds of Buddy Pipps, Highlifters, H-I-G-H-L-I-F-E-R-S. He also appeared alongside visiting American musicians during this period, including a guest artist shot on the Modern Jazz Quartet of 1959 UK tour. So the name of the touring thing was the Modern Jazz Quartet. He formed his own quintet in 1958, and their style of hard swinging bebop was noticed in America, leading to the release of the Southern Horizon and Freeform album on the American Jazzland label. So he had a recording publicized or done by this American Jazzland label. And the jazz fans apparently might know some of these labels. But the album was Southern Horizon and Freeform. Okay, by now firmly established as an outstanding bebop soloist, in 1960, Harriott turned to what he termed abstract or free-form music. He had been toying with some loose free-form ideas since the mid-1950s, but finally settled upon his conception in 1959 after a protracted spell in hospital with tuberculosis. It gave him time to think things over. At first, he struggled to recruit other like-minded musicians to his vision. Indeed, two of his core band members, Harry Goode, G-O-O-D-E, bass, and Phil Seaman, drum, Les C-O-N-D-O-N, Condon, temporarily replaced K-E-A-N-E, on trumpet in 1961, while Seaman left permanently the same year, his place taken by the return of the quintet's previous drummer, Bobby Orr. Now, it goes on here to say that his freeform music is often compared to Coleman's roughly contemporary breakthrough in the U.S. But even listening reveals deep division between their composition of free jazz. He's being really celebrated as someone who really had his own conception of free jazz. Harriott was always keen to communicate his idea, be it on stage, in interviews, or album liner notes. In 1962, he wrote in his liner notes for his abstract album, of the various components comprising jazz today, constant time signatures, a steady 4/4 tempo, themes, and predictable harmonic vibrations, fixed divisions of the chorus by bar line and so on, we aim to retain at least once in each piece, but we may well, if the mood seems to us to demand it, diverse with all others. D-I-S-P-E-N-C, with all others. In other words, what I gather here, he was writing, describing his style of the free-form jazz. But here is my point. These guys were so creative that what they were doing was really groundbreaking during the period that they were doing it. And they were really making an impression on the foreign market, both in London from this. I got that information, incidentally, for these two musicians that I was talking about from Wikipedia. That information came from Wikipedia about them because they were mentioned. There was a short story on the website for the Alpha Old Boys about, they have several musicians that they mentioned on the site. If you're a jazz fan or if you want to know more about the Alpha Old Boys, I suggest that you go to the Alpha Old Boys website. They have at least 12 to 14 musicians listed. Their picture is there. I just took the first two, and I wanted to really celebrate these two people because they're not here anymore. Some of the graduates are still performing all over the world, really. But these two have passed away. One was pretty young. I think one was only like 39. And with that said, I know that there's not a lot of participation on the board tonight because this subject might be new to some people. I don't know if you're jazz fans or if you knew anything about the Alpha Boy School. But to me, it was a new discovery because I knew about Alpha's Girl School, but I had no idea. I might have heard the name, I don't know. But I didn't know anything about its history or what it was all about. But according to the historians, both Dr. Lumsden, Olive Sr. in her book, and Wikipedia, you know, these guys or the school really contributed a lot or produced a lot of jazz, calypso, and all of that musicians. Not only did they produce or taught the students all different crafts, but they seem to have excelled more in music or concert. There was a big concentration of the students that really benefited from the music. And I read on another article where initially when the Alpha Boys School started with the music group, they were sent most of what they used in the school. Somebody from England or some group from England had sent those instruments to get things started. So, you know, there's always angels of mercy that are responding to their passion of doing good. I see a hand up on the board, so I'm going to open up the mic to a Skyper. Hello there. I can't see your number, but if you're on Skype, you know who you are. Welcome to the backyard. Who do I have? Hello? Well, you must have hit the extra one because I see a little hand up on my my little board here. So if you did that accidentally, then I apologize, but your hand is up. So if you're Skyping in to the show and you would like to participate, you can let me know now because I can't call your number because it comes in as all ones. But I want to welcome 631-451. I'm only calling out the first six numbers to let you know that I can see you and I want to welcome you. 973-373 472 and 954-618. Welcome to the backyard. And I would, if you would like to weigh in on Alpha Boys School and these marvelous musicians that we're reading about, that I don't know if you knew them before, but I didn't, so I'm all excited and giggly like a little girl who have just gotten some special candy or got a new toy. And if my Skyper want to say hello, your mic is open, so I'd like to welcome you if you would like to talk to me. If you, I'm sure that you must be on the telephone for me to see you on my switchboard. So if you're using Skype, your mic is open and you may talk at any time. And for the rest of you on the board, if you're listening online, I'm sure you will see the number there. It's 718-766-4558, and you can join the Labrish if you wish. So with that said, I see 631-451 with a hand up, so I'd like to open the mic and welcome you to the backyard. This is Margaret. Who do I have?
Hi, Margaret. Good evening. This is Janine from Long Island.
Oh, hello.
How are you?
Facebook fan, I am great.
Yeah.
You hear about how wonderful boys making movies?
Yes. I was hearing about it, though. I did know about this. My sister, I was hoping she was able to come on because she knows more about these things than I do. As a matter of fact, she knows about the Alpha Boy School when I couldn't even remember that they had an Alpha Boy School.
Right. Well, I also read where a lot of the people who play in, or even now, but who the original players in the military band.
Yes.
You know, we talked about the military band, came out of Alpha.
Yes.
Because they had a lot of percussion and drums and things like that when in the early school.
Right.
But I had no idea that we had an Alpha Boy School that was started, you know, in 1883.
I didn't remember that either. I knew of the Alpha Girl School, but, you know, I forgot about it or really didn't hear about it. But, you know, it's like something I don't remember.
But you know, I think there's so much to learn from our past.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times we take things for granted, and I think I did a history on a lot of the schools. You know, when they got started, who started them, whose idea it was, and that's all in the archives. And I, you know, encourage some of the listeners that might have interest in Jamaica history to check it out, because
right.
Try to get the material from an authentic source that, you know, would be relevant to the truth, you know. But I thought this was a very fascinating story.
Yes, it is.
Because we talk about the diversity of the Jamaica people, you know,
mm-hmm.
coming from all different parts of the world. And it's ironic because as Jamaica produced their athletes, their scientists, their doctors, you know, just people in different disciplines, they too contribute so much to the rest of the world.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And to know that, you know, there were a lot of different British colonies, you know,
right.
all scattered in the Caribbean. But if I may say so myself, Jamaica is not the largest,
mm-hmm.
but they seem almost bigger than life in what they have contributed to the world's culture,
yes.
not just to our own
no.
culture, but they have branched out. The little seeds that came from all of the world and got planted there, you know, and got mixed up in the pepper pot
mm-hmm.
and the stew, have just blossomed and bloomed and continue to do marvelous things that a lot of Jamaicans don't know about.
That's
and
true.
We, I suppose there's some we will never know about.
That's
but
true.
As I discover these little nuggets of wisdom, I just get very excited about sharing them.
Yes, it's very interesting, you know, and for us, I have to include myself. I really didn't know a lot that you spoke about, so,
you know, it's
something learned.
Yes, and I do hope that some of the listeners, you know, really find this interesting, because I think that the more good things we know about our history is the better we can feel about ourselves.
Amen.
And I want to use this as an opportunity to encourage even the seniors. You know, I call myself, as you know, Janine, a senior. I'm not just a senior. I'm a senior.
Yes,
I am going to be celebrating a double number come this month.
I know.
You know, and I sometimes have to say to myself, oh, behave yourself, Margaret, because I'm giggling like a little girl when I find these neat things. And trust me, I'm usually finding out some of these things as I try to read from. Some of the print is so small, and some of the things, when you copy and paste them, they even get smaller.
Yes.
But I am seeing this for the first time, and I cannot believe my eyes.
Yes.
I remember doing a story about the Pang sisters a few years ago. It must have been the second year after we started broadcast. And there was one of these sisters that were of Chinese descendants that had made a movie with Orson Welles.
Oh.
And some of the people, even in my generation, the next generation from me might not even know who Orson Welles was or here. But to me, that was, like, unbelievable.
Yes.
And she was mentioned in the New York Times during the time she was doing that movie. And I said, oh, crap, I never knew that.
You see?
That we were making movies in those days.
Yes.
Isn't it amazing? And here tonight I find out that some of our jazz players and our graduates of Alpha were involved in movie making.
In movie.
Not that they were making the movie themselves.
No.
But they were
included
in the film.
Yes. Uh-huh.
So I just find that so inspiring. And I hope that the current flock of our Jamaican graduates will get some inspiration.
Yes.
From the people who were before them, because believe you me, even though they might think it is hard to get things off the ground or get their passion to live their passion, you can imagine how hard it was in 18 something.
Oh yeah, in those,
you know,
days.
And in the early 19 something.
Right.
So you know. Things are much easier now. They have to be.
But they both died young, though.
Yes, from the
age that you gave.
Mm-hmm. But in spite of that, the point is, they learned from that school.
Mm-hmm.
They apparently, it was very nurturing to them. They felt loved and appreciated.
Yes.
They went on with their careers to develop what they learned in their early days.
Exactly.
Which is really, you know what I mean, they capitalized.
Yes.
They got, and the fact that they were so nurtured, because if you go on their site and really read about how they really revered the sisters that helped them so much to come into their own. And it is from classical music all the way down to real roots music. You know, it was all types of musicians that really came out of that school. So I just believe that it's a marvelous representation of who we are as a culture.
Exactly.
Just very diverse, and our roots came from all over this planet.
Amen.
Because the original person who started the school
was, her father was from Portugal, brother, one of them, and her other sibling was French.
Yes.
But they landed in Jamaica.
Yeah.
And
yes.
she was born there.
Yes.
So I just believe that that island is totally blessed.
Amen.
So what we need, we, you know, we have used up our R already. What we need in the diaspora, even though we might not be going back there, we need to just know that the island is a jewel.
Mm-hmm.
We need to think of it lovingly. We need to bless it in whatever way we can.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we need to think positive.
Yes.
And know that the seed is still blessed and it will multiply and grow the good things.
And also to bring out the,
grow.
Also to bring out the good of the island, you know.
Right. And whatever we can do as a person individually to bless somebody else, even if they're not Jamaican,
mm-hmm.
we will be multiplying what came out of the island. That's what we'll be doing. And no matter how small, whatever we can do for someone else,
right?
Just know that that is how we become immortal.
Amen.
Because
mm-hmm.
if we help another individual, whether the, and especially the young or even the seniors,
mm-hmm.
we are leaving a legacy of ourselves behind.
Mm-hmm. That's so true.
So that's how I want to end this show tonight, to just encourage my peers to leave something of themselves behind, whether it's in their grandchildren, in a child, or another person.
Right.
Because we got a wonderful gift,
mm-hmm.
having been born there and had the nurturing from whoever nurtured us, whether it was our family,
mm-hmm.
our school, our church,
mm-hmm.
or whatever. It helped to make us who we are today.
Exactly.
And we need to celebrate that and bless it and pass it on.
Yes, that's the important part.
Pass it on.
Mm-hmm.
So the old boys of Alpha spoke so lovingly of the people of the that nurtured them, that really inspired me to find out how that band of people happened to, you know, have taken up its cause, because those three friends were struggling
mm-hmm.
to keep it going. They had a passion and they were not giving up.
Right.
They were going to help the poor and the unfortunate. And that's what they're doing all over the world, you know. Like everything else, the order has its challenges.
Yeah.
But, you know, what we can do is cling to the good and the good that we can do and know that somehow, somewhere, that will multiply and be blessed.
Yes.
With that said, I want to thank everyone for being here as usual. We have quite a few people on the board. I want to thank you all, even though you might not have put up your hands to join the Labrish. I love and appreciate you, and I am very glad that you came by to join us in the backyard. We are here each week on a Thursday at 8 o'clock. I see another hand up, so I'm going to open up the mic because I always book some extra time. So 301-373, your mic is going to be open in a minute. Wait a minute. Your mic is open, 301-219. So who do I have?
Well, I'm in meeting, so I'm not going to tell you who you've got. But I was trying, you know how long I've been trying to get hold of you on the other phone. I had to leave the other phone and come to this one. Anyway, I just wanted to say a very, very happy double number and on to the next double number.
Well, thank you so much. And, you know, today happens to be the celebration of Women's Day. Did you know that? I wanted to mention, whenever you go on Google and there's a little, the Google name is always messed up. Well, I don't mean messed up, but artistically presented, it's always because they're celebrating something. I didn't know that. I remember I used to go and I said, what's wrong with these Google people? You know, what's all this stuff that they're putting there instead of the Google that I know in the different colors? But if you click on it, it tells you why they're actually changing the Google sign. And today, it's because it's the celebration of Women's Day. International Women's Day all over the world.
Oh, didn't know that.
I forgot to mention that, but I want to celebrate you and all the women of the world.
Thank you for...
Were you calling through Skype before?
No, I was calling on my regular phone, and then I called on the cell phone now. And this is Margaret.
This is what?
I know who
it is. Yes, you are still in Florida, are you?
Yes, I'm still in
Florida. Okay, well, welcome from we were like Florida today here in Atlanta where I live because it's not 75 today, and we're supposed to be officially still in winter. But
well,
did you know about the Alpha Boys School when you were in Kingston?
Yes, I knew of the Alpha Boys School. I was trying to remember where it was, and Yes, that's what I was trying to remember where it was. And then you mentioned Orson Welles. He's one of my favorite actors. I just love that movie, Tomorrow is Forever. Isn't
really? We did a show, I think it was called The Pang Sisters of Balaclava. And one of those sisters actually starred in a movie with him.
Yes.
So it's ironic how, and I never heard of her or the movie. It was mentioned in that show, you know, at my age. I've done so many shows because it's a weekly thing that I can't remember the events of all of them. I just remember tidbits. But if anyone is interested in perhaps finding out what the movie was, you can look up The Pang Sisters of Balaclava, and it's in the archives. I remember when it's was done. But Blog Talk Radio has a search, and I think there's a search bar if you're listening online right at Backyard Libraries. So when you put anything in the search, you'll be searching within the Backyard Libraries archives. So that's a good way to find any show that I might mention that we did of the past. But again, I want to thank all the listeners for their support. And apparently somebody's listening because even after the show closes, you know, we have quite a few hits from week to week. So I want to thank you all for your support. And do let me know what you would like me to research and talk about for you because I know everybody seems to be so busy now. You don't have time to do your own research. But I'll be more than happy to do it for you. So just keep me posted and let me know. So BJ and Miss Janine and all the other listeners, I want to thank you for sharing this hour with me. And I'm looking forward to seeing you all next week. And as we say in the South, y'all. That's how we say it here in the South. So with my little patois and my English and my Southern swag or slang or whatever, I'm going to wish y'all good night. And as I always do, please make it a great week.
Amen.
And I'll see you next week here in the backyard where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica all together now.
Love.
And we just could not do it without Margaret.
Oh, thank you so much. I am honored. And it's keeping me young.
Yeah, because you know I'm having mine too. So I know about all these double numbers.
Yes. Well, be sure to tune in next week, y'all. And I'm looking forward to seeing you.
Okay.
So finish up your rum and Coca-Cola or your coconut water, whatever favorite drink he was. It was. And you can continue to feel the cool trade winds floating across your face.
Well, right here where I am in Long Island, we're having a lot of wind.
Okay, well,
we're having a lot of wind here. So I can hear it from, you know, in the house. Oh, heavy the wind
is. Yeah, we're expecting
outside
that tomorrow. But I'm going to put on Mr. Ken McLeod. You can listen to him for a couple of minutes as you finish up your favorite drink. So, good night.
Hey, thank you.
Good night and God bless.
And God bless.
God bless.
Okay. Night, night.
Night, night.
Yay!